And Attorney General George Brandis joins us now to discuss metadata and the counter-terrorism laws. Senator Brandis, good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
As you've heard there, many of the ISPs don't seem to be ready. There's still a lot of confusion about what sort of metadata they're meant to retain. Have you explained this properly to them?
It's been very thoroughly discussed with the industry. There is an implementation working group comprising the industry leaders, industry association, and the Attorney General's department. We are working closely with the industry to ensure that there is full compliance with the obligation. There is an 18-month period commencing from today during which companies which are not compliant as of today, which is the 6 months after the legislation came into force, are able to apply for an extension of their compliance obligation. Those applications will be treated generously by my department. Our objective here is to ensure that there is compliance, but as you said in your intro, we are more concerned with implementation than law enforcement.
Well, how do you explain this confusion then? Because clearly there are some out there who don't know what they're supposed to keep. Well, what are they supposed to keep?
I think that there is the obligation is expressed very clearly in the legislation. If there is confusion among some members of the industry, then I suspect that's a question better directed to them.
Well, can you spell out what they're supposed to keep, though?
The obligation is to retain metadata for 2 years. And the legislation sets out a uniform standard. One of the problems, Michael, that law enforcement and security agencies have had in the past is that there has been no uniformity across industry in terms of metadata retention practices. And one of the key objectives of the legislation was to create a uniform standard. Now, different businesses and industry participants will need to adjust, in some cases, will need to adjust their business practices to be compliant with that uniform standard.
Okay, but one of the problems seems to be what exactly it is that they're supposed to keep.
That is set out with particularity in the legislation.
And what is it?
Well, what is required is that metadata, that is information about a communication as opposed to the content of the communication, be retained by industry participants. There is a detailed technical specification which is set out in the legislation.
Okay, well, AM's heard, as you heard in that story, from a small ISP in a regional centre who says this is putting too much of a burden on his business. Do you need to provide more support for smaller ISPs in particular?
Well, we are providing support, and that support is directed primarily to the smaller ISPs. The government is supporting the industry to the tune of $131 million to assist it in and to assist industry participants to adjust their business practices to be compliant with the legislation.
No, that's understood, but it doesn't seem it's enough for some of them.
Well, there are many players in this industry, Michael, as you would understand. This is an important national security obligation. We do, frankly, expect the industry to assume a large part of this burden, but the government is assisting particularly the smaller industry participants by providing, as I said, $131 million to enable them to adjust their business practices to be compliant.
It is still going to cost consumers, though, isn't it? Because presumably that $131 million isn't going to cover all the costs, and extra costs will be passed on.
Michael, there have been many discussions between my department and industry over more than a year now, and we judge that the $131 million that the Commonwealth is providing is a fair contribution to the reasonable cost of being compliant. By the way, many industry participants are already compliant because many industry participants already retain metadata for 2 years or in some cases more. As I said earlier, the purpose here is to establish a uniform standard that all can meet.
Okay, on the counter-terrorism laws, are you personally comfortable with 14-year-olds being detained without charge?
I am. I think what we saw with the event that occurred in Parramatta the Friday before last with a 15-year-old boy who had been inspired to perform a horrendous terrorist act, an act of murder, demonstrates that, unfortunately, the reach of ISIL and ISIL surrogates and agents in Australia is extending to younger and younger people. This is a very, very serious problem, of course, but I think the age of the person concerned last Friday week demonstrates that 14 is not too young an age for an order of this kind to be made.
What happens to them while they're detained? Do police, for instance, have powers to question the individuals?
There are in the legislation that I'll be introducing in the next sitting fortnight, there are particular safeguards in relation to minors under the age of 18. At the moment, by the way, the minimum age is 16. There are no particular protections for minors in the 16 and 17-year-old age category. But under the legislation, there will be particular protections and safeguards for minors in the 14 to 17 age category.
And what will they be?
They will be various measures that will limit the capacity of police to question or deal with minors in a way that is regarded, given the age of the person, to be unreasonable. And that will be, when the legislation is published, you will see the detail of those particular safeguards.
Look, well, New South Wales, as we've heard, wants to hold someone without charge for 28 days. Are there any legal impediments to that? And could that, in fact, be a breach of the Constitution?
Well, there are no legal impediments for the New South Wales government to legislate in that respect. And, of course, the states have their own control order and preventative detention order regimes as well. But there is a legal impediment, I'm advised, for the Commonwealth to do so, and that is because a detention without charge could be seen for an unreasonably long period, could be seen to be a form of executive detention and therefore a violation of Chapter 3 of the Constitution, which prevents the executive government from exercising a judicial power.
So they can basically go it alone, can they?
Well, the New South Wales government, subject to, and I don't profess to be an expert on the New South Wales state constitution, but that constitution is able to be amended by the New South Wales State Parliament. But certainly from the Commonwealth's point of view, we have to get to establish the right period so that there is sufficient flexibility and capacity for the police to meet their operational needs while at the same time avoiding what could be regarded as punitive executive detention. Punitive detention under Commonwealth law can only be ordered by a court.
Okay, just finally on the Commonwealth legislation then, that's set for introduction soon. When's that going to be, and will there be anything else in it that we don't know about?
When you say we don't know about, I first foreshadowed the fifth tranche of Commonwealth legislation at the Countering Violent Extremism Summit in Sydney on the 12th of June. The final draft of the bill was shared with the New South Wales and other state and territory governments on the 2nd of September. So that the point I'd make to you, Michael, is that this has been a matter of collaboration and discussion with all of the state and territory governments, including the New South Wales government, for some months now. There is also, under the COAG process, a working group that has been looking since the beginning of this year at counter-terrorism laws, and the bill that I will be introducing in the next sitting fortnight after this, in other words, in about 4 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks hence, picks up a number of the recommendations of that COAG working party as well.
Okay. Senator Brandis, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Michael. Goodbye.
That's the Attorney-General, George Brandis.